Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This evening's meeting was called to order at 6 o'clock. We went to closed session and came back in and open session opened at 7:05. We'll begin this evening's meeting with an invocation led by Cami Polis, flag salute by Eileen Miranda. Please stand.
Dear Lord, please be with us as we make the decisions that affect the students of our district. And please bless each and every one of us in this room and help us keep the students in the forefront at all times. In his name we pray. Amen. Amen.
Please join me in the flag salute.
Right hand over the heart. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Cox?
Here.
Mrs. Foles?
Here.
Mrs. Miranda Jimenez?
Here.
Mr. Flowers?
Here.
Ms. Shoemaker?
Here.
Mrs. Busola?
Here.
Mrs. Kaplan?
Here.
This evening in closed session, we took the opportunity to discuss certain items regarding a recommendation of a student expulsion, student number 206316. In accordance with the Education Code number 48918J, the board will take final action for this item in open session on the expulsion matters as described in item A of the closed session agenda. With regard to the recommendation to expel student number 206316 for violation of Education Code 48900, C, J, and K, is there a motion for this item, please?
I'll move.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
It's been moved by Jessica Shoemaker, seconded by Cami Polis. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you. With respect to item D, conference with legal counsel, anticipated litigation, significant exposure to litigation pursuant to government code sections 54956.9, D2, D3, E2, and E5. We discussed one matter. In closed session, the board took action to approve a written decision concerning an appeal to the board made under the district's uniform complaint procedures. And that vote was also 5-0 with no abstentions. Very good. With that, we have nothing further to report from closed session. With that, we have a presentation.
Yes. I'm actually very excited about this, and I see many of our teachers and principals here from the schools that we're going to recognize tonight. The California Business for Educational Excellence names public schools for their honor roll, and the honor roll is based on school districts closing the achievement gap and encouraging all schools for learners in all schools to work at high performance. We've been named on this for many years. But this year we have several schools that are out of 1,022 high poverty schools that are increasing the academic performance and closing the achievement gap. We have several schools in our district that are named. I just want to read the Litch CBE chairman and past CEO said, having high standards, effective school leadership, and staying focused on student academic achievement has paid off for these honor roll schools. These schools are an inspiration. Our goal is to highlight these amazing schools who have been succeeding with our kids. So I'm really proud. I mean, I know with the LCAP, we're focusing on closing the achievement gap, and I think our district has had a long history of that being a priority. So we want to recognize Cameron, Merced, Merlinda, Monta Vista, Orangewood, Vine, Hollencrest, and San Jose. And if our principals who are here could come up, I believe Mr. Cox has something to say.
What a motley crew, huh? Congratulations to all of you, and appreciate everything that you do on behalf of the children of West Covina. Tonight, the West Covina Unified School District and the Board of Education recognizes each of these schools for their California Business for Education Excellence Honor Roll 2013 Award, March 25th, 2014. And with that, I have Cameron School. Mm-hmm. And Merced. And Merlinda Elementary. And Mata Vista. Orangewood. And Vine Elementary. And Holland Crest Middle School. And San Jose Academy, and I didn't see. Again, to all of you, congratulations for the hard work. We appreciate it very much. Congratulations.
And can we get a picture of you? I'd like all of you up here, please. And if you're any staff from your schools, want to come join you for obviously. Come join. You all should be recognized. Yay. Go in the picture. We'll take a view.
Thank you all. Thank you all for being here, wherever they went. I guess they took off. All right. I have nothing to report this evening. Board of Education reports. Ms. Miranda Jimenez, please.
I do. It's a very busy 2 weeks. We had our West Covina City Subcommittee meeting. I wanted to let my colleagues here know on the board that we talked about a few items, the soccer complex and what the city's going to do, and then in turn what the school can do to support and be aware. So that was really good. We talked about an SRO officer and the city's priority to taking a look at that and looking at the cost of that. And then they're asking us as board members to start discussing some of the things that maybe we would like, how much we would be willing to spend, et cetera. There are no hard and fast decisions at this point. It is not even something that they're voting on. But they want to see where our district at, along with Covina Valley, is at. And there's a lot of different configurations to make that happen. And Mr. Flowers joined us at that meeting, so he got to meet everybody on the city side. The last thing on the agenda was the community college grant and how that there's the writing that's going on in process right now for adult ed. And we're a part of writing that, though we don't have adult ed here at our district. So that was really good. Congratulations to Edgewood Middle School on the Poetry Slam. It was so much fun. I took my family. We've gone every year. This is our fifth year going to the Poetry Slam. We really enjoyed it. And to the teachers who put that together in the English department, it was a lot of fun. West Covina's open house was really, really good. Teachers and staff and administrators did a great job. I had so much fun meeting with students, talking to students, teachers. And seeing the videos, the big highlight at the end, the video that the students put together was a lot of fun. At the end of the week on Saturday, again, and I apologize, the English teacher at West Covina High School who put on Dr. Seuss Day with the literature club.
Ms. Rodriguez?
Yes, thank you. There we go. Thank you. Wonderful job. Amazing job. I showed up not knowing what to expect, said, holy cow, I will be back, and brought kids back with me. And they went from item to item. And as a matter of fact, Ms. Rodriguez, when we left, my kids and the neighbors said, we had more fun than we thought. Because they really thought there was little kiddie activities, but they had a lot of fun. Amazing job. And I got to sit down with students and talk about college and talk about options. So great job. Look forward to having it happen again next year and expanding it into the community, because they really did a really good job putting that together. Merlinda, excellent job on your open house. Thanks to the teachers who met with Mr. Flowers and I. We went there together, who talked with us, who showed us thinking maps in action. Excellent job. And I would have to say my family and I said best popcorn ever, because they mixed caramel and kettle. So that was really, really good. I got to bring that home to my family. Coronado did a great job. If there's anybody here from Coronado, your back to school night was really good too. Mr. Flowers and I were there together, and Mr. Marantes gave us, thank you for giving us the time, answering questions, taking us around classroom to classroom. Excellent job over at Coronado. And I want to thank my colleagues here on the board, Mr. Flowers and Ms. Poulos, for going to the CSBA Region 23 Education Summit. By far, they said, the best panel ever, and unfortunately, it wasn't as well attended as we would have liked, but the information was so valuable. So we're going to talk about, we as a region are going to talk about ways to increase attendance, because the information they gave us was great information for all of our LCAPs throughout our region. So excellent, excellent 2 weeks. So thanks, everybody, and thanks, Mr. Flowers and Ms. Poulos, for being there and supporting the Region 23. Okay, I'm done.
I just wanted to say, at the school district sitting meeting, she had mentioned the SRO. I know I was confused in the past when they paid for half of our SRO. They paid for half and we paid for half, and we got a full-time SRO. It looks like what they're proposing is we only get what we pay for. There won't be any partnership where they're going to pay for any part of our SRO. So if you've heard anything in the community about that, they, because of their cash flow problem, they will not have any money to put towards an SRO. So the discussion would be how much, if the district wanted to move forward with that, how much we'd be willing to pay, and they want a commitment for how many years, because they don't want to pay a police officer unemployment. So just to clarify that issue, I know a lot of people that's important to them, but I thought that it would be a partnership, and that it was made clear that they had no money to really partnership. All the money would come out of our pocket.
They were hoping we'd partnership with Covina Valley, right?
Right. Well, they said no. They said it could go either way, that maybe if we took a half one, it could go to we could partner half to Covina Valley, half to us. But they said most likely what it would be is that half the time would be in the community surrounding us, so they would get to know our students maybe at the park. They didn't say that, but the park also came up. But I just wanted to make that really clear, and that the open houses that I was able to attend, you all did a superior job as usual. And it was fun seeing the contrast between our schools, so you can see we really do have choice in our schools.
And student rep report.
Okay. Coronado High School. Coronado will be honored at the April 1st West Covina City Council meeting for attaining model school status. We welcomed new transfer students from West Covina High School and Edgewood High School last week. We held a very successful and well-attended open house last Thursday. Parents were able to pick up student progress reports. Our field testing begins on April 1st as we usher in the Common Core. Our softball team winds up their season, and we will begin to compete in co-ed soccer. West Covina High School. The busiest time of the year has officially begun at West Covina High School. The first phase of our testing cycle began March 17th with the administration of the California High School Exit Exam for all 10th graders. We tested over 620 students over a two-period. Our students did a great job. The KC exam is the first of two exams they will take this year. 10th grade students will also take the Life Science State Exam April 9th and 10th. We continue to plan for the administration of both the 11th grade CST EAP and the CAASP field test. Our students will be taking the online math and language arts non-performance task as well as a math performance task. Teachers and students have been practicing the use of the assessment site as well as our technology. Official field test assessments begin Monday, March 31st. Saturday, March 15th, our National English Honor Society hosted Dr. Seuss Day at West Covina High School. Students planned many activities to promote reading and celebrate the legacy of Dr. Seuss. It was a great event. Saturday, March 22nd, our ASB hosted a special leadership symposium for incoming ninth graders. Students participated in leadership games and activities and were able to get a small taste of Bulldog spirit. This yearly event was developed to support the transition of 8th graders to the high school environment. We know all participants had a blast and are excited to join us next year. The spring sports season is in full gear and we are excited that boys volleyball is undefeated so far. We are also very proud of the efforts of our baseball, softball, tennis, golf, track, and swim teams. They all have better records than this time last year. Finally, we hope everyone enjoyed our open house. West Covina High School was packed with parents and students who celebrated all the work that has gone on this year. Edgewood High School. Students completed the KC with 100% attendance for both days. Students are currently taking mock exams for IB testing as well as other state tests. Travel Club is making final plans for the upcoming trip to China. Cheer will be participating in Nationals in Anaheim on Friday, March 28th. Interact is working on building their Relay for Life team, which currently has 30-plus members. The EHS Alumni Association held a fundraiser last week to raise money for scholarships. The EHS Alumni Association is looking for volunteers to present at their third annual Career Day, scheduled for April 30. If interested in participating, just call the counseling department at EHS. Choir held their spring concerts last week. Cheer held the first Mr. Edgewood contest last week. It was a delightful and entertaining evening with 11 charming contestants. The winner received two free prom tickets and a free tuxedo from Fire Tux. ASB will host its fourth annual talent show on April 4th. Auditions will be held this week. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. The next item on our agenda is items from the floor and public comment. First of all, thank you all very, very much for being here tonight. You're obviously here for a particular item, and you'd like our attention to that. And again, I appreciate you being here. I do have one request to speak for us, and that is the president of the Teachers Association, David Bagey. But before David comes up, I'd like to introduce to you somebody special here. We have a rather light board meeting tonight, and I know that each and every one of you are very interested in the well-being of the students, well-being of you know the opportunities that we afford our students. And I'd like to introduce to you and actually ask, and if you're at all interested, please stick around and listen to his presentation tonight. Dale Scott is a statewide renowned authority on school bond measures. And he's written a book called Win-Win, an Insider's Guide to School Bonds. He's worked with us before on our bond, how many years ago? A while ago. Yeah, and helped us in 1999 and helped us with the development and doing a lot of things that we've been able to do in the district. He's here to talk about a special education technology grant that may be available to us. So after we've had the opportunity to listen to David Bagey speak tonight and we move on in our agenda, if you'd like to stick around, I'd certainly encourage you to do so. And if any of you would like to also speak in addition to David, I will open it to the floor. David?
Thank you very much for having me this evening. I was here 3 board meetings ago, and I spoke to you about how things were going, and I just wanted to give you an update. We're here tonight. We're here tonight to show that this negotiation affects many of us. There were several people that thought only a few people would be affected. But if you look out here into the audience, you see many teachers, many support staff. I know it's sometimes easier to look at things as numbers, but when you look at it, we are all individuals. And there is a famous book written by Shane DeWolfe called The Crayon Box That Talked. And if you look at it, it says that each one of us is unique, but it's not complete until we're all together. Whether it be support staff, whether it be teaching staff, whether it be administrative staff, we're all here together, and we all need to work together. Life has very few meaningful moments for us, but there are a couple that I want to share with you. One happened to me Thursday night when I was at Coronado High School's open house. I was walking down the hall trying to get to see the classes, and I passed a man and his young son, not a young son, a young man, tall, much taller than I am. And he smiled, and then he turned to me and said, "Aren't you Mr. Beggy?" And I turned and I said, "Yes." And he says, "I was in your second grade class. Why are you here tonight?" And I said, "I came to see what's going on here at Coronado. I'm part of the Teachers Association, and we're here to see what you're doing." He said to me, and I quote, "You came to a wonderful place. This is a great school. I made some mistakes, but now I'm going to be able to fix it, and I'm going to graduate." Having had that said to me, that was a meaningful moment. And having known that child from when he was in second grade to see him now as a senior, and having made some mistakes and to be able to straighten them out, that shows real partnership between all levels. And to me, that was meaningful. The second meaningful moment happened to me this morning. Any of the teachers that are part of the Vine family or the support family know that we have a family of children that are very unusual. I happen to have the last one, or the caboose, in my classroom. Very bright, very outspoken, but always right on target. He comes into my room today and he said, "We missed you yesterday. You weren't here." And I said, "No, I was homesick, trying to get over a cold." "Oh, okay." And then he comes back to me and he says, "Why do you feel so cold today?" And I looked at him and I said, "What do you mean?" And he says, "You don't feel like your warm self. Why are you cold?" I said to him, "I have a lot on my mind today, and a lot of things are going on." And he said to me, "You know what I do, Mr. Beggy, when I have a bad day? I go home, put on my relaxing clothes, and eat a big bowl of noodles that my grandma made for me. You need to go home and have your noodles." I said, "Well, thank you. I'll keep that in mind." And then later he turned to me and he said, "You need to forget about everything. We're what's important to you. You are ours. You belong to us. My number one job is to teach kindergarten at Vine School. And the other hat I wear is standing up here tonight for the union to be in charge of our teachers' association. How I got here, I'm not really sure, except maybe I wasn't fast enough at not it. This has not been easy for me. I've always put what everyone else's best interests first. It bothers me when we look at 1%. I know 1% is very costly, but we are moving our school so forward. We've made so many milestones, and in some people's opinion, that's not showing respect for your employees, a 1% raise. It is very scary and very hard times that we are in, But we need to extend the hand out and say we're here to take care of everyone. People want to know the hard costs, the hard figures. I received a paper out explaining to me the balances. But are we here in education for the children, or are we here in a business? We must look at this as education, the most valuable resources we have. Standing in this room and sitting in this room and standing out in the foyer are the most important resources this district has, my fellow teachers and my fellow support staff. Without us working together and without your guidance, we could not do our job. You are in a very hard position right now, recovering from what has happened. But it is time to remember that for many years, we were also involved in deficit spending in our personal lives. Yes, we can't have the moon. No, we can't have everything we want. But we do need to reach something that is respectful and something that shows that we are valued. Every day, we face the most important thing this community has, and that's our children. We are in full swing of testing in a total new way. The teachers have embraced it. Support staff has been out checking to make sure our computers are working. We are gathering, we are gearing up, and we are producing some of the most wonderful open houses which show the celebration of what we're doing. It's a shame that some of it's clouded by negativity or this side versus that side or people saying we're tearing the threads of collaboration. Anyone that knows me knows that is not my motive. My motive is to figure out what is best for everyone. As we approach the end of the year, this is going to resolve itself one way or the other. We know that. But we must look into our hearts, look into forethought, look at hard figures, and see what can we possibly do and what is the best for everyone. I ask you to continue to think. I ask you to continue to look at the numbers. We are not the experts as to where cuts should be made. That is in your area. Or how we pay for things. That is in your area. We understand that. One sad point came to my attention, and I don't really listen to sad things, when someone said, the teachers left the last time before we came to hear the financial page. Well, part of that was my fault. I asked the teachers to leave at the end of the open session so that the board could work diligently on the things they needed. If I made a mistake, I apologize. But don't hold it accountable to anyone but me, being the president of the organization. It is my hope and my continued good thought that we can render this situation, we can put this behind us, and we can remember the meaningful moments. Because this is such a short thing in such a long plan effect. Thank you very much for your time.
Again, I'll offer that if anybody else would like to speak to the board this evening, you're certainly welcome to approach the podium.
Good evening, everybody. I think I was here the last time you guys were here. I think I picked the wrong days to come. My name is Veronica Cortez. Like I mentioned the last time I was here, I'm a parent of two children under this special ed umbrella here at West Covina. And I'm here to ask for 3 points. I would like to ask the board members to allow or to include in your website, on the West Covina website, a section for special ed for us to be able to get notified of information. As a working parent, sometimes they'll give us handouts on a Tuesday about a training or workshop that is on Thursday. I need to arrange babysitting. We need to get notified more than, 48 hours. So that was my first point. My second point, I was at the Regen 2023 on Saturday, and I recognized some of you that were there that day. They briefly talked about the Common Core, but they didn't mention anything about special ed. Not surprising. And my question would be that we need to get trained for the parents. We need to get information about Common Core. I know the superintendent from Azusa mentioned on Saturday 64% of the high school students that go to college need remediation. These are regular students. These are not our special ed students. So as a parent, I'm concerned we're going to do the Common Core. How is it going to affect our children? Because from what I gathered on the meeting that on Saturday, they mentioned it was a lot of thinking, a lot of reasoning. And for our kids, that's what they struggle with. So I think we need to look into that and let us know, give us a peace of mind, if it's through training, email, a handout, something to let us, give us information. And I know three sessions ago you mentioned you were going to bring students back to West Covina School District that went to other schools. My concern is that there was an issue last year with my son being bullied in the restrooms at West Cove. They were being bullied by other kids, telling them to urinate on the walls, put feces on the walls. And my concern is that they should be monitored. They should be, if you're going to bring more classes in, then we should be have a restroom near for the kids that have special needs. I know you're trying to have everybody combine at the schools, but I think there should be little things, somebody there, monitor, someone to see, that our kids are not being bullied or told, do this, and our kids are doing it, and they think it's a game when it's not good for them. So these are my three concerns as a parent with two kids through special ed. I don't think I'm asking for much, just giving you guys information, and you guys do with it. What do you have to do, during your meetings? But thank you for your time.
Mrs. Cortez, thank you very much for your time, and we have heard, and your recommendations have been discussed with the superintendent, and we certainly would appreciate any inputs that you have, to our staff to see the things that would help you as a parent of special needs children. Eva. Anybody else?
I'll be really brief. Anyway, just got this toy relatively recently. Okay, pretty cool smartphone. But anyway, I looked up the Consumer Price Index, and between 2008 and now, we've gone up 8.65%. Okay, so I just wanted to point that out. Okay, and I realize budgets are tight. I know that. But we also want to realize, too, that, with this Common Core, mind you, I have a science credential. I'm not language arts. And, boy, to work on that is something else. Okay, we've done a lot. We've raised your test scores. We've just done a lot of work in the last 6-7 years to bring up those test scores. And with this Common Core, whew, that has really thrown us. Okay, but I just wanted to kind of throw that out. Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Mike. Anybody else? Thank you all very much for being here this evening. We will move on just briefly for a few things, and we'll go to the business and organizational session, the approval of the agenda and consent items.
I'd like to pull off number 7, naming of a school. I want to apologize to the board. I actually was the one who wrote the board policy on naming the facility, and then my thought process, it was about naming a school after a person, but there is a process that we have not followed before we bring it to you. So
oh, right, you just want to table it?
Let's table it. Yeah.
We'll just table it.
I will be bringing it back. But
would anybody like to put anything on consent?
There's nothing left.
There was a change to the minutes, so just to have that noted for.
Okay. Well, I will move the agenda consent items with the note that item number 2 minutes of the meeting has been amended, and we are tabling item number 7, proposing to change the minutes for the school from 2014 to 15.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Truly, thank you all for staying. I don't think you'll be disappointed. Although, Dale, I don't hope that I'm not overselling you. All right. The next item on our agenda is item number 3. If I can get to the right page. An information report, a presentation on education technology bonds. And like I said, Dale Scott is here to make the presentation. You want to?
I just want to say that after completing our strategic plan and the initial work that we're doing in the LCAP, the number one concern that keeps coming up is technology and the need for technology for the future and the lack of being current with what we need for our kids to be 21st century learners. And it's been something I've really struggled with because, unfortunately, the only thing stopping us is the cost. The desire is certainly here. Many of our teachers have just really jumped into this. And I've had the opportunity of hearing Dale Scott talk about a very creative way of funding technology, and felt that it would be important to have the board here, Dale, because it's one way and one opportunity for us going forward. So leave it to you, Dale.
Thank you.
wait just a minute. Ladies, if you'd take it outside, we'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks. In the interest of time, there are a couple of slides in the beginning of the presentation which are really more of a commercial. So why don't we skip over the commercial break and go right to the meat. And if I can remember how to do this, it'll be great. The left-hand side? This one? Oh, there. Okay. There we go. So let's go to page 7. So the funding of technology by school districts in California is just a terribly perplexing problem. I mean, it's something that everybody needs. And with a few exceptions, districts that are very well endowed with foundations and whatnot, nobody's really been able to come up with a great source for funding. Not only one-time funding, but you know, technology doesn't last that long. So how do you continue to replenish that funding? So when we first started looking at this a year ago, we first started by thinking, well, what are the components that need to be funded? And I think, myself included, a lot of people think of technology as devices. But in actuality, as you can see, these sort of four buckets here, there's more to technology funding for a school district. There's devices, there's the infrastructure, there's the software needed to run the projects, and then there's the implementation of the program itself. So all of those we're trying to figure out a way to fund with this program. On the next page,
can you maximize the screen?
I maximize the screen.
The square. The middle button by the red X.
Yeah. There you go.
It was.
Yeah. I'll use this laser. Hopefully, I won't get it in anybody's eyes here. Zoom. Oh, the 70%. This.
Thank you. Thank God for this grant.
Kind of works.
Yeah,
that's okay. You can bring it up. There we go. Okay, good. Perfect. Yeah. And then now we just got to get the next one. Okay, so I want to start back at the beginning. When we're putting together a financing for a general obligation bond, and this is what a number of districts have tried to do. They've tried to use general obligation bonds to fund, voter-approved general obligation bonds to fund technology.
The problem with that is that a general obligation bond typically is sold and then repaid over a 25 or 30 year period. Yet you have this technology that has a useful life of only 3 to 4 years. So you have this mismatch of the term of the loan and the use of the proceeds. And some of the districts that have tried this have been, I think, correctly criticized for doing that. In addition, the bonds tend to be sold once. And so you can hear districts, they say, well, we're going to provide financing for a district for all of the students, and we're going to give everybody a something, a Chromebook or a something. But then what are they going to do when those machines become obsolete? So there's no replenishability built into those. So when we started looking at this, we started out by looking at, and this is your district, the district has $5 billion of assessed valuation. That's the value of the property within the community. And we said, well, if we were to fund a bond at a $60 per $100,000 tax rate, how much would that spin off over about a 30-year period? And this isn't the amount of money that you can get. This is the amount of money of taxes. If you look at this using a 3% growth rate, that would, over a 30-year period, spin off about $143 million in taxes. Now, if you look at the next page, and this will be the test to see if this works. Good. In a conventional financing, the type of bond that you did in the past, that is sold and you receive the funds up front, but of course you have to pay interest on it. And like a home loan, about half of the money that comes from the tax assessments goes to pay interest, and about half goes to pay the projects. This doesn't really work for technology for the reasons I just stated. One, you don't need $70 million for technology right now. You might need it over time, but you certainly can't use it right now. You don't want to fund that over a 30-year or a 25-year period. And it doesn't provide that replenishability that I talked about. This would be one time. So we backed up and we said, okay, well, what if we did something similar but slightly different? Now, I have to just, for those of you that weren't around for the first bond, first and only bond, let me just give a quick background. When the voters approve a bond issue, those bonds don't cost anybody anything. It's just an approval. It's like an accounting entry. And they don't cost the taxpayers anything until the district decides to actually issue the bonds. And so if a district's voters pass, let's say, $50 million in bonds, and the district decides to only issue $10 million at that point in time, then that $10 million begins to be assessed against the taxpayers. The remaining $40 million is then called authorized but unissued. And it sits there. It doesn't cost anybody anything. It just sits there until you, the board, decide to issue the next series. And there's no restrictions on how long it can sit there. So in your case, I think we spent probably 10 years. Is that right, Steve? I think it was probably 10 years before the district issued all of those bonds. And then when they're issued, then they begin to be paid off. So let's go to the next slide, if we can. So in this case, and a number of districts are doing this now around the state, we would go to the voters, we would ask them for approval of a certain amount of bonds, and in this example I gave the maximum, in this case $138 million. But when the approval is given, you would issue the first series as a very small amount, in this case $9 million. But you would pay off those bonds, not like a conventional financing over 25 or 30 years, you'd pay off the bonds in 3 years or 4 years, somewhere to match the useful life of the assets. And then in this case, that $9 million would be used for the four buckets that I described up front, for the devices, for the infrastructure, for the software, for the implementation. And then at the end of 3 years, those bonds are paid off. And can I go to the next slide? And then you would issue the next series of bonds. Again, amortizing it for 3 years or paying it back over 3 years. And that would be the refresh. Then there'd be another $9 million that would come in. And then the next slide. And then in 3 years, the next series of bonds. And so on and so forth until all of the series of bonds have been sold. Now, I show this as actually going out 25 years, but it doesn't have to. You can go and ask the voters for 12 years of authority, or 15 years, or 9 years, whatever works for you. And I also show this as very tidy, that, you know, every 3 years something is going to be sold. But in fact, that is it's not an automatic pilot. That decision is made by the board every 3 or 4 years. How much do we want? How much do we need? What's the tax rate? How do we, you know, do we want to skip a year? Do we want to extend it, et cetera, et cetera? But this would be how it would work. So can I go to the next slide? So when we do that, we've now, can we just go back one slide? Sorry. So when we do that, what we've accomplished here is the two goals that we set out to begin with. One, to have the financing match, the term of the financing match the useful life of the asset. So in this case, 3 years. And we have this ongoing replenishable source of funding. So for example, in this case, in the year 2030, we don't know what the technology will be that the district needs. But in this case, there would be $13 million of funding available for that technology, approved by the voters. And then the third thing that is accomplished, if I can now go to the next slide, is because we're not leveraging off of those future tax payments. Like I said at the beginning, when we typically sell a bond, you're selling it, and then you're using that stream of tax payments that come in for the next 20 or 30 years to pay it off. In this case, we're paying it off right away. And since we're not borrowing on those future receipts, it really eliminates most of the interest costs. So you can see in this slide, in a typical financing, similar to what you've done in the past, about 50 cents of every taxpayer dollar actually goes to pay interest. So in this case, $70 million would be approved, but the taxpayer would be responsible for about $140 million. With the EdTech bond, because we're not leveraging it, about 90% of a taxpayer dollar is then used for projects, with only 5 to 10% being used for costs and interest. Same tax rate, same exact tax rate. It's just more funds into the community. Can I get the next slide, I think? That's it. So some people have looked at this and have said, well, that sounds great, but first of all, what's the interest rate that's being charged? And what about future interest rates? So the interest rate right now for these types of bonds is about 1%. That's the interest rate currently. Now, these numbers that I've all shown you have assumed 2%, but the actual interest rate in today's market is about 1%. But someone might say, well, that's great, but what happens in 10 years? If we're not going to sell these bonds except every 3 years, what happens in the 10th or 12th year if interest rates go up? So we looked at it. We said, what happens if interest goes not from 2%, but actually 8%. Now, we're talking about a short-term interest rate, a short-term tax-exempt interest rate. It's never been 8% in modern finance. There's never been a rate that high that's a 3% rate. But we said, what if it went to 8% and it stayed there the entire time? And you can see it has very little effect. Sure, there's going to be more interest costs. And sure, the projects are going to be delayed a little bit because more money has to go to interest payments and less to the projects. But the impact is pretty small in that doomsday scenario. And the reason is because you're not leveraging against those future dollars. You're paying them off so quickly. So I'm going to pause here for a moment because I want to talk about the district and its voters and demographics and kind of next steps. But I want to stop and answer any questions about the financing itself.
Just real quickly, can you just why such a disparity in the cost of issuance in the short term?
Well, because you're issuing over and over again. So every time you issue, you have to pay the legal fees, you have to pay the underwriting fees, you have to pay the rating fees. Now, I think this is just done mathematically. We've said, okay, it's going to be X number. That's, you know, so whatever the costs are times 8. In fact, I think what's going to happen is, and we're working on it now, these are going to go into pools. And so you'll combine with other districts to lower the costs. And so I don't think there'll be the kind of increase that you see on these slides. But yeah, there are going to be more costs. But it pales, as you can see on the top here, the amount of cost of issuance just pales to the amount of savings for interest. So most districts looked at that and said, well, as a trade-off, we'll take that. Okay. So let's look at your district for a minute. Oh, I'm sorry. A few more slides about technology. On the next page, page 15, under Proposition 39, which was passed in the year 2000, you have a tax rate limitation as a unified school district of $60 per $100,000 of assessed valuation. And that's what all these numbers have been driven on. Now, that doesn't have to be $60, and we'll talk about that in just a second. But then there's a second requirement, which is a statutory requirement, which is called the bonding capacity. And the bonding capacity limit is 2.5% of your assessed valuation. That's that red line, assuming 3% growth. That would be 2.5% of your assessed valuation. And so as you can see, you are nowhere near your bonding authority in this district. I mean, you are way, way below it. And the EdTech bond, because only a small amount is issued at any one time, barely puts a blip on that. So if there were other future needs or some other proposal comes up in years coming, you have plenty of capacity to go forward. And I don't think anybody can claim that this district has been profligate on its use of bond funds. I mean, you are way under the average. On the next page, page 16, just a metric so you can kind of see what we're talking about. This is actually only at $30. So at the x-axis is the tax rate. The $30 here at the far end would be $30 per $100,000 of assessed valuation. On the y-axis is that amount of bonds raised divided by the number of students, divided by 14,000 students. So, for example, at $30, that produces about $200 per student per year. That's not saying you're giving $200 to the student. That just gives you a sense of the amount of funding that would be available. At various levels. And if you drop that tax rate down to $15, that would produce about $100 per student. So to give you some sense of the kind of funding that would come in. Okay, now let's talk about your voters. Please. So just a little bit of background. You probably know most of this, but I thought it'd be helpful to look at it. Obviously, we run a lot of campaigns looking at the underlying demographics. Is always kind of the beginning of saying, is this something that's doable? Highly Democratic district. That's not to say that Republicans don't vote for bonds. It's just that, in general, Democrats are more likely to vote for bonds. But a highly Republican district, a very large decline to state, which tends to be a Democrat. Not many absentee voters, which is not unusual for L.A. County. And to me, the most interesting is actually a pretty mature district. So you have a good 50% of your voters over the age of 45. These are registered voters, not people that actually show up. And, you know, about half under the age of 45. So it's pretty much on average where the state is, maybe a little older. If you look at the next slide, this is voter turnout. And as I always tell people, all elections are not created equal. There is big difference in turnout and big difference in this district. Now, why is this important? It's because the more unlikely a person is to vote, the more likely they are to vote yes on a school bond. I know that sounds kind of counterintuitive. But the person who is a casual voter, tends to come only at the presidential and gubernatorial voter elections, tends to be more supportive. And so you can see here, the red are the gubernatorial elections, the presidential election. Last presidential election, you had 60% of your voters turn out. Last gubernatorial election, about 50% of the voters. But then when you get into the primaries, you're really down below the 20%. Next election would be November of 2014, and that would be a gubernatorial election. I'm sure you're all already following it with bated breath. It's yeah, that'd be great. You know what? Let's skip to page 22. So the way we and what we have worked with this district, the way we work with all of our clients is, and this kind of takes you through the schematics of what happens before the election if you decided to proceed. There's the type of presentation I'm making now. Since we have worked with the district for many years, we would undertake an actual survey of voters, not all voters, just the voters that we assume are going to vote, to find out, you know, what's the pulse of the community? Is this something that they would have an interest in? There would not be, if we for whatever reason found that those results were negative, or if we decided this was just not your year, then we would absorb the cost of that survey. If not, and you decided to go forward, documentation will be prepared. The district would vote on a resolution to place that before the voters. Obviously, we'd work to put that resolution together for you. If for whatever reason you decided not to go forward at that time, we would still absorb those costs. And then finally, and that would have to be taken place, that would have to be passed by June, July of this year. If it were on the November ballot, and the election fails, your costs would be limited to the cost of paying the county to run the election for you. There'd be no other costs involved. If you did pass, and I'm relatively confident that you would, but we'd obviously want to wait until we saw the survey results, then you would have funding available in calendar 2015. Finally, one last slide. I thought you'd be interested in seeing, as I mentioned, the survey research is actually extraordinarily accurate. These are most of the bond surveys that we've done in the past few years in general election campaigns. The light blue is what I call the margin of error. So if we look down in the middle, here's one for Pomona. About a third of the way down, we predicted in that survey that the election would get about 72% with a margin of error either way of about 4%. The gold bar there is the actual vote that came in. Those that are in blue are those that were above the margin of error. Those in red were those that were below. And there's reasons for all of them. Hemet ran a great campaign up at the top. West Hills in Fresno County, the county failed to put the item on the ballot. So that caused a little bit of a setback. They still won. All of these, by the way, won with the exception of Sierra Unified in Fresno County.
Pass rate is on these bonds? I mean, the voter?
Our pass rate consistently over the years.
What is it? It's 55%?
It's a 55% passage rate. That's right. These would be done as a Prop 39 bond.
Briefly explain what that Prop 39 is.
Sure. Proposition 39 was passed by the legislature in 2000. It was approved by the voters of California in 2000 as well. It's a constitutional amendment which allows the threshold for general obligation bonds to drop down from two-thirds to 55%. And with that, you have to have some restrictions having to do with the tax rate. So you're limited to a $60 per $100,000 tax rate. And there's other things that are required as well. There has to be accounting. There has to be a Citizens Oversight Committee. There has to be an audit, et cetera, et cetera. But that's where most bonds now are sold and brought to market through the Proposition 39 mechanism.
Since that was passed, what would you say is the approximate pass rate of bonds that have gone through that?
Prior to Proposition 39, the passage rate was about 55%. After the passage of Proposition 39, it's about 80%, 80-85%. Our passage rate is 90%, just in case you're interested.
For this particular?
Since year 2000, working on all of our bonds.
Rate was what, how
much? 90%.
Since 2002.
I guess you're finished.
What? The light show.
Go ahead, I'm teasing. Just the lights went off, so.
It was Claremont. They just had a bond that did not pass. That was on technology. Their intention was to do a technology bond. Was that something you handled or somebody else?
No, I didn't know about that, but no, we have not.
Theirs did not pass.
I think that might have been a parcel tax, as I recall, but I don't know. A bond? Okay.
Yeah, but you didn't handle it.
We did not work on
that. Obviously, you don't know the details. No. I was going to ask what failed there, but I guess I'll call over and ask myself.
Are there limitations on what the funds can be used for? Specifically, or is this?
That's a good question.
Whatever we design it to be,
it's both. So there are legal restrictions on the use of bond funds. You can't use it to pay salaries, for example. With some exceptions. I mean, you can have a manager. For example, if you were building a building, you can have a construction manager, which is a salary. But by and large, you cannot use it for salaries or administrative costs. So that's one restriction. Beyond that, you, when you put the item on the ballot, design the project list, and you decide what will and will not be in that box. And if it's not listed on the ballot as a type of expenditure, then future boards would be restricted from going out and using those funds. So we want to make it broad enough to let you have the ability to do what you want to do over time, but not so broad that anybody can do anything they want in the future.
I have a question. Are you bringing this before other districts also?
Oh, yes. Yeah, there's about 30 districts, I think, that'll be on the 2014 ballot.
Mr. Scott, on page 18, you had indicated here the registered voters and the high turnout of Democrats, but it's my understanding that the high turnout of Democrats actually happens during the presidential, and that on those primary and off-season and even at times gubernatorial is kind of close. Is that correct? Was that your analysis? So is page 18 based on a presidential election
page
or a gubernatorial
18,
election?
Page 18, let's see.
Right.
That's all registered voters in the district. All voters.
But the Democrats come out in high numbers, like what we'd want to pass a bond only on the presidential.
Well, yes. The highest turnout of Democrats is in a presidential race, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
In a gubernatorial, in an established district for a gubernatorial race, it won't be as good as a presidential, but there'll be better turnout. The worst turnout is a special election. I mean, that's just, it's very hard to get people to change their voting behavior and not show up. But clearly, presidential election has the strongest Democratic turnout.
Okay.
I will say, however, this program, the EdTech program, has been endorsed and supported by numerous conservative organizations, including the San Diego Taxpayers Association, the Monterey County Taxpayers Association, the Kern County Taxpayers Association, Chevron Corporation. So because so much of the funding is going to projects instead of interest, and because you as a board have such control over the use of funds every 3 or 4 years, and it's not just something you're hoping will work out, it's seen as a very conservative program that many on both sides of the aisle have endorsed.
Okay, and then I wanted to clarify on page 13, you had said the cost of issuance, $2.2 million, but that there was the possibility to group it with other districts. So what might it drop down to?
Well, that's not, by the way, that's not 2.2 up front. That's 2.2 over
each time,
30
right,
years.
It'll add up at the end.
Right. Again, this shows a 30-year program. I think that's one thing you'd want to test for if you went to the voters to ask in a survey. You'd say, would you be more or less likely to vote for this if you knew it was only going to last for 10 years? Or if you knew it was going to last for 15 years, and get a sense of how long that should go. But I think where this will head is those costs will begin to fall as more districts pass this, then they can bind together and share those costs. And I'm expecting to go very similar to the TRAN program that's run by CSBA, which is really a percentage. It's a set percentage, whatever size you are, you pay that. And it's not these repetitive fees over and over again. We run the CSBA TRAN pool, by the way, so we have a fair amount of experience on the pools, and we're trying to get them to embrace this.
The voters have voted to tax themselves so we could update all our facilities. They are still paying that. Mm-hmm. So we would be doing an added tax to them on top of the Prop 30 that they voted to another tax on themselves to pay for. In talking to community members, they think Prop 30 was going to be the answer to all of our prayers. And really, it just kept us from having to make deeper cuts. And they don't understand that. How many of these bonds have you passed since people since Prop 30?
Well, Prop 30 was on the ballot in 2012. Is that right? 2012. And that was a major concern during the 2012 campaign, because people said, well, everybody's going to vote against this because we have, they're being asked to pay for the governor's tax and they're being asked to pay for the bond too. And you actually are a rare district that has only one bonding authority. Most districts have two, three, four, and more. So you're rare. So we asked.
The last time I knocked on doors, they were just opening their tax statements.
Okay. So
boy, did I hear about it, because they were opening their bills as I was knocking on their doors.
So we asked that question. I mean, we actually, in our survey research, we actually asked that question. We said, we explained the governor's program. We explained what the tax would be. And then we asked, now, which of these statements describes you? I'd vote for both the governor's tax program and the local bond. I'd vote for only the local bond. I'd vote for only the state tax program, or I wouldn't vote for any. And when you added up number one and number two, I'd vote for both, or I'd vote only vote for the local bond, it came to exactly the same number of support. Then we've done similar studies, similar surveys since 2014, and we don't find that level, that reluctance. Now, that may be different in your community, and we test that. I mean, that's the only way you can get it.
Because we were talking about people deficit spending. Mm-hmm. And when our families were really affected in our district, just like you heard the teachers saying that their lives were affected by this, the big recession. Mm-hmm. And some family members are now, both parents are employed once again, but they're not making the kind of money they did. And to ask them to further struggle, it's really hard when they're sharing with me how difficult it is when gas has gone up, food has gone up, and they're only going to go up more, and they're just trying to survive.
I'm with you. I bet, you know, and I don't mean to sound this the way it's going to sound, but you're not doing that. You're asking them if they want to do that, and you're taking first, if you were to do this, you take the first step of actually having a blind survey of independent voters to try to figure out what's the mood, and then there's an election, and that's why you have an election, to let people decide what they want to do.
When you do the blind survey, are you going to be, is one of the questions, are you a property owner, since that's who the bond affects? Not
yeah,
just
no, we ask that.
Necessarily the voter?
Well, what we do is we, first of all, we don't ask anyone that's just a voter. We try to identify the type of person who is most likely to be coming to the next election. So these would be people that are regular voters, not just anybody that happens to vote.
A regular voter does not equal property.
Yes, but it equals the person who makes the decision on the bond. Now, we do.
No. It's easy for me to spend somebody else's money.
We do ask that question. We ask the question to determine whether they're a property owner or not. But in the end, the ballot box is blind as to whether they're a property owner. Anybody can be a voter whether they're a renter or not. And sure, that's why in San Francisco, every bond election has ever been.
I think what you asked me, and I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but I mean, you know, there's an inherent inappropriateness of that, and where what you're saying is to determine whether or not it's going to pass or not.
Right.
That may not be the issue. The issue would be, do the property owners support this? As to whether then, you know, we get 60% of this body to determine whether or not that property owners are supportive. I understand if you see what I'm saying.
Let me say two things. One is I'm sorry I didn't mention it, but one of the other requirements of Proposition 39 when it passed is that in order to place an item on the ballot, it requires a 4/5 majority of the board. So it would take four yes votes, not three yes votes. In the survey research, yes. We ask that question, and then we ask the question, are you Republican? We ask the question, are you a homeowner? We ask the question, do you have children in the schools? Have you ever had children in the schools? And then you can slice and dice that information as much as you want to figure out who's for it and who's against it.
Now, you also said that you will ask people who are more likely to vote.
Right.
So, in other words, you're not going to get probably the lower prop. You're going to get the people who most likely who own homes. So, the people who...
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they tend to be a more conservative voting base. And especially in a gubernatorial election, in a presidential election, I mean, you saw the slide. In a presidential election, if a person doesn't vote in a presidential election, they're not a voter. I mean, they're just not a voter. So, you can make a very wide screen. But then when you get to the gubernatorial, you want to bring that in to people that have a consistent voting pattern. And that's going to be typically a more conservative voter and more typically a homeowner. But then you look at those numbers. And you don't try to even that out. You don't say, well, we think there's 40% homeowners and 60% renters, so let's make sure we get a mix of 60-40. You take whoever the voters are. That are in your screen, and then you figure out which percentage are homeowners and which percentage are renters.
Well, for me, I was happy to hear that we'll be able to pull out who the homeowners are and what their response is, because quite frankly, that's the most important to me, people who are actually going to have to pay those bonds.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a question that we always ask in every survey. And then we ask that question another way. We ask the question, do you believe that quality, do you agree or disagree with this statement? Quality schools improve housing values. I mean, that's the other way of coming at it, backwards.
Another way is, does the tax rates and structures of a city affect your decision to buy into it?
Yeah.
To move on your point that when we did pass the bond, other than the wrought iron fencing and the lighting that we did to the exteriors to make the drive-by look pretty and take care of that, the next thing we did is went underground. And we did put T3 lines in at district-wide. Do we still use those? Do you know? I don't know. Some.
The technology changes.
Yeah, so that's 15 years, roughly, thereabouts. And so we have how many more years to pay for this equipment that we're not using?
I think about 10 years.
Yeah. So, to your point earlier as to what you're saying, so this does make sense in that capacity. So, all right, that's all we have. Is there anything else that you'd like to add? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate you being
here.
You're
welcome for the book.
Yeah.
You're very welcome. Thanks a lot.
With that, we have nothing else on the agenda this evening. Everything else is on consent. Any other board discussion? All right.
Oh, yeah, just that. Oh, no, oh, never mind.
Well, now you've piqued my interest.
I'll call you. just that at some point, because we do, hold on.
If you promise to text me, that.
No, stop. Hold on. We have our meeting. Jessica, and I'm not sure if you're aware, we made the meeting with the city in May? Was it May, Cammie, that we said?
I didn't bring my paperwork.
May 8th. And they wanted us as a board to come with some sort of feel for, they wanted the board to discuss it so that there could be discussion at the subcommittee meeting with the city. And our meeting is May 8th, so we need to at least put it on the agenda for us to discuss. We may not move forward with anything, but at least Jessica and I can report, along with the superintendent, that we did discuss it, and these are some of the things we can do.
And so we're clear, we're supposed to develop
a plan that says the city has no interest in helping protect the schools, that we need to bear 100% of the cost because they have been financially irresponsible.
We need to save.
And all of those new officers that were promised in the last election coming back are not coming back unless our students and our programs pay for it.
We need to tell them what we can pay for and hear from them, because they also are going to be working.
But they have said that they
exactly.
are not going, they have no money.
You understood what they were saying. They have
yes.
a cash flow problem,
right.
and they probably won't have the cash. If they, you know, they're
right.
appealing a lawsuit that they, with the state, but if that goes through, that they are going to.
You mean the $12 million lawsuit? That
yeah.
will annihilate any balance the city has?
Yes, so they will have no cash.
Right.
The thing is,
right.
the SROs that we've had in the past have never been paid out of general fund balances. They've always been paid out of
grants,
out of the Juvenile Justice Division grants, and then there was another one in the second round. So
there were no grants.
And once it ran out,
right.
and we didn't have the
money
to do it.
Well, either way, we need to report back something from our district, so I'm just suggesting that we add it as a discussion item so that we can, and maybe we say we're not coming to the table because y'all are not coming to the table. But I'm just suggesting let's put it on our agenda before then.
Well, I think we have people in the room that if we have money, that's where the money goes.
Yeah. All right. Then we have several open houses.
Sweet.
Spring break is April 14th and 18th, and our next board meeting is April 22nd, and we'll see you all back then. Thank you very much for being here this evening, and thank you for taking the time to spend with us and going through what Mr. Scott had to present.
I know.